Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week I like to explore the cutting edge of what's possible as humans, how we're expanding the frontiers of who we are as conscious beings as we move into a new level of reality. And this week I have a very interesting guest who has devoted much of her life to that exploration, coming through spiritual levels of reality into what is now a more connective, physical level of reality. Her name is Alicia Price, and we'll be talking about her work with the One Taste community and also her evolution as a being on the planet. So, Alicia, are you there?
I am. Hey, Alan, how are you? Good evening.
Good. I'm good. There's so much. You were so articulate the other day when we were on a panel discussion for my television show that some of those points you touched about what you're doing now and how you are attempting to live more connected to the people in your community, I thought were really well expressed. So let's see, where should we begin? I think a little background and like where you were as like a spiritual seeker and being with Amma on tour and then finding out and coming to where you are now. So let's go back to the beginning. Where did all, were you always open to spiritual knowledge and pursuit?
I was. I absolutely was. I mean, that's a channel, so to speak, that was always open for me ever since I was a young girl. It was always
Was there an early experience, though, that awakened something for you?
I think it was always part of how my eyes work in the world. I always felt people, I always maybe had a little bit of extra kind of perception and could see people more deeply. I could see people's emotions. I could feel people, whether they were happy or whether they were sad. You know, I felt very connected to animals when I was very young, that kind of thing. I'm a feeler, you know.
Right.
I'm a feeler, yeah.
You were a feeler in a sort of unfeeling world in a way. Did you sense yourself being different because you were a feeler?
Well, I don't know if I saw it that way when I was young, but I definitely felt different. I felt a sense of, maybe feeling a little bit of isolation.
Wow.
I don't know that I thought it through when I was young, but I definitely felt that. I always felt a little bit disconnected.
So then, where did you meet your first teach? What was I? Sorry.
Pardon me?
No, it's just one. So when did you first, like, formalize your path, like your first teacher, your first teaching? Where did that happen?
Well, you know, I was raised by my parents to be very open. I wasn't, I was raised from the get-go to follow, like, my own, what I believed in or what I thought. I was never taught, like, you have to believe this and you cannot believe anything else. And so I grew up in a way that was very open, and I grew up in nature, and I also had never had anything very heavy forced on me. So when I started to get a little bit older, when I was in high school, I started to feel like, oh, I know there's something bigger out there. I had some kind of thirst for spirituality, and so I started to investigate the different religions of the world. I read a little bit about all of them, and I happened to start to more strongly resonate with Buddhism and Hinduism and more of the Eastern spiritualities, and so I started to look into those a little bit more deeply, and I had an affinity for the Indian culture and, you know, on a very deep level that was a little bit deeper than my thinking mind. I was drawn to it and got into some of the art. So, you know, if you want to know, I think my first teacher that taught me about spirituality was a dance teacher of mine, because I studied classical Indian dance. And, that would be someone that was someone that was a woman named Nita Gulati, who was a dance master. She was about 60 years old, and she had about 165 students of dance. And in Indian dance, you learn all of the movements and all of the mudras that you see in all the statues of India.
Yeah.
And you learn those postures in an integrated way that is a flow, and you also represent and express in the different dances. You express a lot of different stories from Hindu mythology.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a very integrated practice for me because I wanted something physical in my life, and I'm not the kind of person that can feel satiated by going to the gym.
Right, right. You wanted some spiritual integrated. I mean, if we're here to integrate the spiritual and the physical. And
right.
You,
yeah, so it makes,
yeah.
It's like a breakthrough for me in my mind right now that, oh my God, it totally makes sense. I had all of those thirsts quenched for me in the one experience because it's both very ancient, it's very spiritual, there's a lot of motion, there's a lot of intentionality, and it gave me a physical practice that was very strenuous and worked my physical body and had me feel physically healthy.
Right, so you really got into that and it really fed you. It fed your soul, in a sense.
Yeah, it did, and it fed my body, and it helped the two to integrate. And it integrated my mind and my body because there's an intense amount of integration, to integrate the mind and the body. It's like it's all very choreographed, and you have to think about it, but then you have to let go into this deeper flow and ride the greater wave as the music moves you. So it's about both. It's about the mind and the body and building a bridge between the two, which is exactly the work that I do now with One Taste.
Right. We'll get into that. But let's just explore, like, this development a little bit because I think it's really interesting. So that set a foundation. Like, how old were you then?
I was about maybe 18 or 19 when I got into Indian dance, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then... Then did you started to explore more spirituality, right? And was it then that you met Amma, the sister in India?
Yeah, it was not long after that on a unrelated to the dance, I had a friend that said, hey, there's this woman that I go to see. She's considered to be a living saint. I'm going to go see her in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel at all curious or the desire, you can come with me. And I did. I felt really curious. I didn't know anything about teachers per se, very little. I didn't know much about the concept of guru or teacher. And
uh-huh.
I just, there was just like a big yes in my system. And I just lit up and I decided to go. It just seemed very, very obvious to me. And so I went to see Amma for the first time in New York. Yeah,
right. And then Amma, for people who don't know, actually have a video on YouTube where I'm interviewing Amma. If you just punch in Alan Steinfeld and Amma, you'll see this beautiful interview with this amazing woman who just spends all day hugging people. She is probably the most popular guru in India at this point. And what opened up for you when you saw her? Something shifted at that moment, right?
There were a lot of things that shifted consecutively because I was waiting in this hall, and it was a really large hall. There were a few thousand people. It was a Unitarian church in New York.
I was there. I bet I was there.
Yeah. And it was time for her to walk in. She wasn't there yet, and everybody was waiting, and I was just fascinated by the whole experience of the people were chanting and waiting, and Amma was actually in my dream last night, Alan, and she hasn't been in forever, and she was in my dream last night.
Isn't
it was
that
so
funny
beautiful.
We're talking about her? Because you don't really talk about her that much, in a way.
I don't, and I had the most beautiful dream with her last
night. What did she do in your dream?
It was really unique because I was at some kind of program with her, and it was really beautiful, and there were dancers there and stuff like that, and we were being really affectionate, and I was actually, babying her, like I was being very motherly to her and, like, playing with her and teasing her, and she was very much in the kind of the childlike mood. It was very unique. It was beautiful, but it was very tender and a lot of physical contact and a lot of love, and it was really, actually, I woke up and it had, a very warm, loving, open feeling. It was very cool. It was awesome.
It sounds like you have now felt like, I mean, my interpretation of that would be you have now reached another level where you can now be the mother, in a sense, be the nurturer instead of always the one going. You're now in the role to do what she's done, take people in and nurture them and love them and see them grow in that way.
Yeah, in a sense, that's I've done a lot of work, and I know, like, I feel pretty full in a lot of ways, where I've been filled up by beings like Amma and with what I do in life. And so, yeah, absolutely, my role at One Taste as a leader is to really hold other people, not only the other people that I work with and live with, but also the people that come in as course participants. There's a certain way that you hold and kind of embrace to help to create with intention the group so that people can come in and get the experience that they're wanting to have, whether that's, you know, to feel held or to let go of something intense or to really fully, for the first time, express themselves when they never have before. So, yeah, I absolutely.
But let's get back to, you're in the hall, and you're sort of a normal girl, I would suppose. And
what?
And this amazing being who's radiating, I would say, true divine, that's my interpretation, radiates love. But she looks pretty ordinary. If you just look at her, I mean, it's like, okay, that's just a regular person. But her radiation of love and beauty, in a sense, just is beyond the body. But anyway, what happened to you? What were you feeling? You're in this hall. You don't know, in a way, what to expect. What happened?
Yeah, well, there were maybe four key things that I experienced, one after another, that blew my mind. Number one was, I was way on the other side of the hall, and I heard the specific chanting and the bells ringing and all that they do as soon as she enters the hall, so I couldn't see her, but I actually felt, and I, with my own eyes, I looked out and I could feel a wave wash over everybody, where everybody got calm and relaxed, and like I feel like I actually felt it wave through everybody, like everyone took a big breath and just dropped down, like,
wow,
a lot. And I was like, that's interesting. Like, I was very, like, wow, that's really interesting. I can't even see this woman yet, except, and I just saw her affect an entire group of a few thousand people.
Wow.
I was like, that's pretty cool. Yeah,
that's
pretty
good that you were able to catch that, though. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sensitive.
But that's pretty great. That's a great observation. No, that's cool.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I was very interested in the whole thing and curious.
Okay.
The second thing is she gets up on the stage in front of everybody. I could finally see her, and she's this tiny little 5'2" woman.
Yeah.
And she stands up and she raises her hands in the pranam to everybody, the crowd, and she just is obviously very loving. And all of the men around her, her swamis who are wearing orange, they're these big guys, and they look very strong and you know, robust, and they all wait for her to sit down, and then they all sit, and they all sit in a way that's obviously physically lower than her, and so she's raised above them, and they all sat down in this way that I perceived to be authentically humble, and I just started watching all of the men, and there was a woman as well, but I started to watch the men that were her lead disciples, and they were obviously all very surrendered to her. It was really lovely, and it touched me, and it healed me in a certain way to see large men that were empowered, who were probably great leaders, that were so surrendered to a female leader.
But let me just say about that, it's in a sense, it's like there's no she doesn't have an ego, so it's not like you're surrendering to an ego, because there's no one there. It's like the divine emanations that you're seeing in this body that is the, you know, in a sense, the surrender, because that's a reflection of our own divine emanation. So
yeah, but Alan, I didn't have that referent at the time.
I get it.
You know what I mean? I right now, like, if you ask me, I say, yeah, there's nobody in there. You look into Amma's eyes and there's light radiating out of it. There's no she, there's no, I absolutely experienced her that way, but I didn't have that reference. But for me in that moment, I was actually being gifted with a healing, because for the first time, I really felt like I witnessed men that were surrendered to the feminine. That was a new experience for me, being from the West.
Yeah, that's
beautiful. Was very healing for me. Yeah, it was very healing for me.
Great.
Yeah.
So that was the second thing that happened.
Yeah, and then the third thing was, well, you know, she gave her talk, and it was all incredibly simple and beautiful, and yet it landed and resonated very deeply with me, and I kind of, my eyes were wide, like, whoa, I've been waiting to hear this, and this stuff sounds like core truth to me, and that, again, startled me. But the thing that really hit me was as soon as they started playing their devotional music, like I suddenly was like, wow, they play music together too, and they're sharing that, and the whole audience is going to experience this music. And the tabla started playing, and the harmonium started piping, and then they started singing, and it was like this rhythmic, ancient, like, story being woven through time and touching every part of me and being so rhythmically alive in the moment. Like, it's, you know, Indian music, it's so flowing, you know, it's so melodic in that way.
Yeah.
I felt like it just unwound all of this stuff in me, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me that this is the music that these people play all the time. It's radiant. That blew me away. The music blew me away because it was pure love and devotion. There's no anger or jealousy, you know, it's not like what you hear on the radio.
Right.
It just blew me away.
Right. That's a
how pure it is vibrationally. Yeah, I mean,
that's
how beautifully.
Really
it blew me away.
So that pulled, and then you became a follower of Amma.
I did,
a devotee.
For over 10 years, she
over
was 10
years.
A big focus of mine, yep.
So you wore white, you went to all the, you went on tour, you, like, helped it with the line.
Yeah, I did a ton of seva, you know, everything from helping to prepare and serve food to cleaning up to helping, you know, do some of the major hall coordination for some of the programs in the Boston area. And
you were really into it.
I
loved it.
Oh my God! Yeah, it was incredibly. Every moment of it was incredibly rich and healing for me, and that was my first real taste of community.
And you were really serving people. You really felt rewarded, and it was.
Oh my
God!
I loved it.
It was all working. So you were celibate too at that time, right?
I wasn't formally celibate when I spent time in India. I was celibate when I was there, but I never took any formal oaths of celibacy, and yet I thought about it, and I was moving in that direction for sure. Yeah.
So here you were totally into it, you were really satisfied, you had a beautiful teacher, you felt fulfilled in your work, everything was happening for you, and then what came up to kind of change that course?
Well, I mean, a lot of things were working for me, Alan. I had a great job. You know, I had a job that afforded me a lot of freedom and stuff like that. So a lot of things were
working. What were you doing?
I was working as a hairstylist.
Oh, I see. So you're having a great job. You had a great teacher. You were really loving it. And then what?
Well, you know, part of the thing of kind of, you know, getting into meditation and getting into energy work and basically being on a path where you're into, like, transformation and becoming more aware of yourself, I started to become more aware. And so as I started to look at the parts of myself, like the different rooms in a house, there were some rooms that were dark and I didn't like to go in. And they were really cluttered. And when I would try to go in there, it was hard to see, and I would stumble around. And
that sounds like my apartment. No.
I mean, I started to get more clarity, and I started to see some of the ways in which I was having a hard time connecting. You know, and I had certain ways that I could connect very well. I had certain areas that I had acumen in, and there were a lot of places where I didn't. I wasn't dating a lot. You know, I felt a lot of inability to connect deeply or authentically or vulnerably, and I knew that I was hungry for certain things, certain connections, and certain, like, expression, and I didn't have it. And
But, you know, someone else who was living your life would say probably, you know what, well, maybe I don't have that, maybe it's dark, but you know what, I'm so fulfilled in there. I'm just going to not go there. I'm just going to ignore that part of my life and be really happy with this part of my life. You know, don't you think a lot of people have to, are doing that?
I mean, yes, I do.
So what was different about you wanting to explore? I mean, you seemed like everyone else. Why did you choose then to, what was it about you or your thinking that made you kind of say, well, maybe I'll go into that dark room and see what else is in there? Do you know what I'm asking?
Well, I do, and, you know, I think on some level it's the core of my being is tenacious in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I obviously have some kind of drive or some kind of desire, and I am...
Desire for what?
To have those rooms aired out, because awakening is how awake you are in every part of yourself.
Uh-huh.
And it became the more light or the more awareness that I started to feel, the more obvious it was to me where I didn't have it, where there was darkness or where I wasn't willing to look, or
uh-huh.
where there was conditioning or trauma or patterns of, you know, habitual ways of being that were just unconscious. And I would, you know, you start to see it. You have moments where you're like, oh, wow, I'm doing that again. I don't want to do that. Or,
right.
oh, I feel like a victim or a martyr. I don't want to do that. And so it was like that kind of thing came up more strongly for me. And
right.
I started to see it myself. And then I also, like, started to get it from sources outside of myself, like, you know, in dreams or in interactions with people, stuff like that. And
you started to get feelings of these places that were incomplete or not feeling...
Well, I could just see. I could see where I was holding shame as a woman, as a female, for my body. And
uh-huh.
that's great. You have moments where you see that. But then I started to see where it was affecting how I walked down the street, or how I interacted with someone in the store, or how I felt about my body, or how I related with people at work because I felt down about myself for some reason.
Uh-huh.
Like, I just started to see it in how it wove its way through every other part of my life. Like, where I was saying no to
uh-huh.
my sex was affecting me as a woman, and if I'm walking around saying, hey, I want to be an empowered, awakened woman,
uh-huh.
then
well,
the
spiritual teaching then, in a sense, wasn't enough for you in a good way, I'm saying. I mean, if somebody else would have just been filled with Amma's love and presence and, you know, so what if they weren't comfortable with their sexism? They would live with it because they were being so much more filled with whatever love that for some people would make a choice to ignore those parts of their lives, and a lot of people do who are on that spiritual path. But,
well, I'm not, I mean, I don't know what goes through other people's
right.
minds.
I'm just
so I'm
making
not gonna,
a judgment, that's all.
Yeah, I'm not going to infer on that, but, I mean, okay. I know for me, I also started to, like, I started to have dreams
yeah.
where Amma was helping me work through some of my shame around sex, or like was
right.
was holding me as I released like trauma from mm-hmm. like childhood or something. And then I started to have dreams where Amma was showing me movies
mm-hmm.
about she showed me this movie one time in a dream where there are men and women relating and they were angry and they couldn't hear each other because there was this invisible wall in between them.
Right.
And I was like, oh my, I get it. You know, there's all of this, like, there's this block between men and women, so they're not actually communicating. Like, it was totally out of the blue for me, Alan, but it just started to come through. You
I
know,
get
and,
it, I get
and
it.
When I was in India, it just started to come through that I started to see, like, that for me to become a nun again in this lifetime,
yeah.
it would be like, I was shutting down, and it wouldn't be real humility for me. It would be false humility covering up my shame as a woman.
I get it.
And I
started to
see through that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that being said, it's like I'm not bashing celibacy because I see it as a true and valid path, and I know people that it's a true and valid path for.
Right.
And, I mean, Amma filled me up, you know. Amma,
right.
like, I feel like she adopted me, literally, and
yeah.
and I got so much, and she also pointed me in the direction of what I needed more of. I didn't limit myself to it. And, you know, Amma and my love for Amma is still a part of my life.
Right.
You know?
Well, let me just interrupt. I think the producer, Seth, were we getting a phone call? Is that what you were saying here? I think someone had a phone call. But
Hey, Alan.
Yes?
How you doing, man?
Who's that?
This is Ken. I was passed in.
What, you were what?
I was passed into the show.
Oh, okay. Did you have a question?
Yeah, well, I didn't want to interrupt, but I
can't. Oh, go ahead. Ask a question, because I didn't know we were... Okay, great. Yeah, do you have a question for Alicia? Go ahead.
Alicia, you're the guest?
Yes.
I am, yep.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good. This is Ken. Hey. I was listening to the show, and...
Yeah, what's your question?
The question is that you were talking about humility and
Could you speak up a little bit?
Were you talking about humility and humiliation?
No.
I couldn't understand
being
it.
And having,
no.
You were talking about the inability to become a nun this time because of humility.
Well, not wanting to become a nun. Yeah. So the question.
I was contemplating becoming a nun, and as I started to do that, as I started to realize that wasn't the path for me, I started to notice some of the things that were coming up for me in that. It wasn't a statement about, like, you know, being a nun in general, but for me, like, I noticed, like, I was, even before I was, you know, coming a nun, I was, like, me kind of feeling humility, but it wasn't real humility. It was actually shame.
Right. Well, keep listening, Ken, because we're going to get to some really interesting points, because Alicia's part of an organization called One Taste, and you can look that up on the internet, onetaste.sf, I think, right?
onetaste.us.
onetaste.us. So look that up, but keep listening. Thanks for calling. You could always email me at newrealities@earthlink.net, but Alicia has only begun her journey here with us, so... Thanks for calling. We're just going to continue. So, Alicia, okay, Seth, you can disconnect the call because I want to just continue the interview because we're really getting to some good stuff here. So, but thank you anyway. I appreciate the call. And it's strange. I don't always get calls. But anyway, no, because here you are at this point. So you're finding out new places in your life and Amma's actually directing you to kind of explore more parts of yourself. Is that what you're feeling, right?
Well, that was my experience, yeah. That was my experience.
And then the next level is what for you? So you don't become a nun, which other people do or that you're working with. And so you want to get more into your body. You want to get over the shame you have about your body, right?
That was a part of it, yeah. That was one part of what I was experiencing in my life for sure.
And so you then, is that when you meet your next teacher?
I've had a lot of teachers. Yeah, I've had many teachers and studied many different things. And I came back to the United States and moved to California, and I was studying some other things and doing quite a bit. And then I had some dear friends that said, hey, there's a center in San Francisco. It's called One Taste. I think you'd really like it. We've been going and doing the courses there and the workshops, so why don't you come with us? You know, they're very honest and authentic, and they have these great groups called in-groups, and people ask questions, and you get to see people and be seen and talk about turn-on and talk about your sexuality and talk about things that you don't normally talk about, like anger or greed or, you know, lust and stuff like that. And it's a very lively, open forum. And
did you have a feeling that you were ready to deal with sexuality in a different way? Was that?
Well, that's exactly why they recommended it to me, because it was something that I talked about. You know,
because you were talking about, were you frustrated sexually?
No, I wasn't frustrated. I realized that I needed to do some work there and some searching, and I needed to look at some of those areas, and I also wanted to get through some of these places where I felt broken, basically. You know, I was kind of stuck in a feeling of being wounded. Like I had some wounds that I wanted to heal.
Because of your family, and were you in relationship as well? Did you have
relationship? Not too much. I dated just very, very little. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, you still felt, you felt this thing about being a woman in this culture, which, you know, is not supported, and...
Well, that's part of it, sure. That's part of it.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, what I'm interested in is how aware, and I think you're very aware of where you needed to go. Lots of people need, like, a teacher to point them out or a therapist, but you somehow sensed, on some intuitive way, the parts of you that needed the work. You know, and that's like a big observation of your own ego. I mean, did you have any insight how we can do that for ourselves the way you did that?
It's Ellen, I mean, the greatest guru, the greatest teacher is life at every moment, you know. And if you have your eyes open, you know, if you have a clear desire, if you have your eyes open, you'd be surprised at how often it shows itself to you, you know. And if I'm... you know, investigating parts of myself, and I'm starting to be like, wow, I want to get clear on that, or I want to have more of that, or I want to this or that, then, I mean, that's how I live, and I lived that way, for years, that, you know, the universe wants you to have it. The universe is like, you know, you speak a desire, and the universe is like, here, have it, you know, and it's like, what is our ability to actually receive it, or what is our ability to actually reach out and take it? That's what I wanted more of.
Right, but it's not just desire. Also, let's take some questions towards the end of the show because there might be some other people calling. But I just want to understand that it wasn't desire. You had places, like you said, those places you didn't want to go, but there was something about you that pushed you into the places that were uncomfortable.
Well, it's a bigger desire, Alan. It's a bigger desire. It's like your desire to be healthy and to eat well. It doesn't mean you don't still have a desire to have an ice cream cone, but then you use discrimination on whether or not you're going to have an ice cream cone once a week or once a month, you know?
Right, but something like sex. Were you feeling uncomfortable about sex in the beginning?
Sure, I felt all sorts of things, just like everybody does. I felt a huge range of things, of desire and wanting and craving and fear and insecurity. I felt all of those things.
Well, that's the part I'm trying to understand, because I don't know if I ever felt like that confusion. I think it's different for men.
You ever feel insecure?
Yeah, I feel insecure.
Sure. That might be something that comes up that blocks you from actually experiencing something that might be available to you if you didn't feel insecure. I mean, that's what I was interested in kind of getting through some of those things that I was feeling, like insecurity, so I could be more in my fullness and have more of what I want and enjoy more of life.
Well, I think that's great. I mean, I think there's an inner kind of guide for that, that I'm just saying that's like a rare talent that other people might not have, or we're not programmed for going into our discomfort. I mean, but I think that's what it's...
Well,
I mean, most people would avoid it, don't you?
It's an acquired taste, I guess, you know, to actually get in there and look at it, and it's something that I've had to strengthen my muscle for, absolutely, to actually know, okay, I'm going to go into this uncomfortable place, and when I get through it on the other side, there's going to be treasure there.
Right. One taste does deal around the sensual, sexual element. If you talk about what was your discomfort around sexuality and sensuality before you came into this kind of organization or community, let's say, I mean, and how has it shifted? And now you're a teacher in here, and you're helping other people through the same passage that you went through, which is
I mean, that's a big part of it. Every place that I've been willing to look at, every location that I've been willing to go to for myself, I regain more of myself. I feel more like aware, more powerful, and I reclaim part of myself and I actually have the experience, so if someone has that coming up for them in a course, I can be like, yeah, I understand.
Well, But talk about where you were before you, where you first encountered the One Taste community. What was going on for you?
But Alan, it's like that's, you keep asking me that.
Okay.
It's like, that's the thing. We dwell in our brokenness. We dwell in all of these. We focus on like the insecurity and the this and I can't.
But where you are now is not that.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. But see, that's the thing. It's like, we tend to dwell there because it's easier to talk about those kind of things than it is to talk about the fullness or the pleasure or the connection or the enjoyment.
I'm just trying to make the connection. How do you get from broken to fullness? So, I mean, that process, not to dwell on what happened, but how do you get there? How do other people listening, how would they arrive at that place of fullness for themselves?
Mm.
That's
well,
what I'm trying to understand.
You know, at One Taste, we do it in connection to other people. You know,
we
do it in connection to, you know, I walk up to you and I, you know, interact with you and you feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And we agree to stay connected there. And then you actually communicate to me what's happening. You can say, wow, I feel attracted to you, but I feel insecure. And then I say, I got it. I understand.
Right.
And then instead of just feeling insecure and walking away, and you never actually start to understand it or look at it or see it as illusion,
right.
when you actually admit it in connection to another person, you get some freedom from it.
I see.
Yeah.
So you're with that person, and you're with them through whatever's come up for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of what we present, you know, that helps to create the container. I see the center, I see our courses, I see all of it created as an intentional container with an idea like, I agree to stay connected no matter what. So someone comes and sits down in a course, I agree to stay connected to them no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So if they go into anger that they've never admitted they had since they were young, and they actually start to express it, I'm not going to tell them, I'm sorry, that's too much, you can't do that
here.
But they actually start to air it out and be present to it and release some of the charge that they've been holding back from ever even experiencing.
So did you have a similar awakening when you encountered One Taste that you did? I mean, of course it would be different, but a similar revelations of awareness when you met Amma, did you come to One Taste? Were there similar but different things that opened up for you in that sense? Do you know what I'm saying?
I think so. I mean, yeah, I had breakthroughs. I had intense curiosity to like, wow, what are they doing here? As soon as I walked in the door, because it felt so amazing. The energy felt so bright and clean, and people were speaking really authentically and more truthfully and more openly than you normally see in other places. And so I was like, whoa, what are they doing here? It stimulated my curiosity intensely, and I still feel curious about those things, you know, and about the ways people relate and stuff like that.
Well, then talk about some of the precepts and, you know, because what it was that creates this community that now is like the next level of your spiritual journey in a sense, and it's actually brought you back in touch with the body. And, you know, I think that's a real important part of a spiritual journey is not to leave the body behind. I think so many traditions do that. I think what One Taste does is integrate into a very natural way.
It does. It integrates because, you know, I was doing a lot of the things that I might do in other, you know, places, in other environments, in other practices. And it's like you do it in connection. So I was working, you know, in the cafe in One Taste, and I'm interacting with people, and it's like... Yeah, just growing my awareness. I'm trying to think of a specific moment, I think. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, or something that shifted for you, you know, where you've had, like, another awakening. I'm just curious, like, what awakened in you?
Oh, so many things.
On your journey, like, particularly with the body, like, how did you come to, like, a fullness of appreciation of your body?
Mm.
Because that was a room probably that was dark and cluttered, it sounded like. And here
well,
you are.
I mean, and you'd be surprised at what disconnects you from your body. I mean, I had a lot of anger that I wasn't acknowledging as a woman. You know, I'm And you know me, Alan. I'm, like, pretty sweet and peaceful and, like, a pretty, like, sweet person generally. I'm you know, and that being said, I can be really strong and really, like, opinionated and stuff. But I had totally blinded myself to and disassociated the fact that I actually had a lot of accumulated anger.
Right.
And so when I started to like kind of relate to people in one taste, and you know, you start to live with people and stuff comes up and they're like, "How do you feel right now?" And I'd be like, "I'm fine," you know, but I was actually angry. and I wasn't starting to see it. And then at some point I was like, "Wait a minute. I'm angry." And I was like totally oblivious to it. And so they're like, "Yeah, that's great. So let it out." And I was like, "What do you mean? I can let it out?" It's like every part of yourself you can show, you know, in the one taste, you know, environment. So it's like there was no part of me that was too much or inappropriate, and that was really startling. And so, you know, I was like kind of like, "Well, I feel really angry." And, you know, when I finally felt like I can be honest about it, because these people really were going, they really were open to hearing what was going on for me. And so I was like, "I'm angry." They're like, "Great. So say fuck off, you know, tell them to fuck off. Is that what you want to say?" And I was like, and I was like, "Yeah." And so I was like, "Fuck off," you know, and then I was like, "Ooh, that felt really good." You know, and it was okay. You know, people were like, "Great, good job," you know, because I was actually letting out some of the anger that I wasn't. And so for like 3 months after I moved into the community, like, you know, just random, you know, people that I lived with would be like, "Hey, Alicia, what's going on? How you doing?" I'd be like, "Fuck off." And it was like, and every time I did that, I felt like breath. And I was like, "Wait, this is okay." And I actually started to feel myself more. Because when you're disassociating from your anger, you're disconnecting from a big part of yourself. And there's a lot of energy.
Right.
You know, it takes a lot of energy to block off a part of yourself. And a lot of my energy was stuck in unexpressed anger.
Does it make you a little sad to know that there's so many people caught in a spiritual life that are so disconnected from that and won't get in touch with that? I mean,
well, it doesn't make me sad. I mean, you know, there's life and death and growth and decay everywhere that you look, so it doesn't necessarily make me sad, but it's like, I mean, I just, and the thing is, it's like I wouldn't have seen it unless I started to do the work to come through it. And yeah, we use not only spirituality, but everything, materialism, everything. You can grab onto something and use it for your own, to keep yourself asleep. And so it's not just the spiritual realm. It's everything. It can be anything you can use
you
to
can
actually
even
cover
use
your
anger
mind.
To keep arrest yourself asleep. It's true.
Yes,
I get
anything.
What you're saying.
It's all how you use it. You know, it's like a thief uses a knife to kill, but a surgeon uses a knife to save, you know? So
like fire can order.
Yeah, and I know I was using some spiritual concepts, which are beautiful, clear concepts. It's not the concept, but I was starting to use it as a way like, "Oh, no, I'm peaceful, I'm selfless, I'm a nice person. You know, I want compassion and peace," and so I was using it not quite in the purest sense, you know?
Right. I get that.
I was using it.
No, I get that. So we only have about 15 minutes, but let's talk a little bit about one taste and the precepts, and, you know, people think of it as a sort of focus on sexuality and sensuality, but it's bigger than that. But let's really cover what it is about, if we can. So,
well, yeah, it is. It's a lot more than sensuality and re-including.
And it's about sensuality. So let's include the sensuality, but just also tell us what it is for people who are just hearing about it for the first time.
Right. Well, I just want to say we include sensuality because it's so often not included.
Mm-hmm.
So, One Taste is, it's a collective, it's many things. It's a business, it's a community, it's a large, broad, extended community that, you know, spans, you know, many different people living in different cities, and it also has an aspect to the community that's a residency, where people choose to live together in an intentional community. At the core, and a lot of the people that are at the core at the residency help to create the business. And
it's so, courses and communication. And
yeah, we have all of our courses, the foundations of connected living and all the courses that go with that. We have a center in San Francisco and in New York where we have physical space. And so we're open. We have our own courses, and we also open up to affiliate workshops. And so we have all different wonderful teachers and instructors and people come in who do movement and communication and tantra and all sorts of stuff. So great people use our space, and we have our own work. And
but what was so attractive about it to you, and what do you feel its real core is that other people can learn from and might want to be a part of?
It includes all parts of the self, you know. It's like if you want to, you can go and be in a one-taste environment, whether it's, you know, coming over and having dinner with the community, or whether it's a two-hour focus group, or whether it's a weekend workshop, or coming to a movie night or something like that. You can come into that environment, and you can bring all parts of yourself. And
right.
There's a way that in the courses it's like, and in the community it's like, that's how I got to reclaim a lot of the parts of myself, because you're encouraged to include all of yourself, and that nothing is inappropriate, including your sensuality, where, you know, it's like in a community environment, yes, bring your sensuality, it's an important part of who you are, you know. And
right.
And the intention is to kind of look at and nudge and get into all of those places that you normally don't want to look. So for a lot of people, there's a lot to be, you know, seen in the realm of your sensuality. You know, for some people, it's money. You know, for
right.
some people have various taboos in various different realms.
Right.
You know, and so it's like we say, yes, like get into that, because on the other side of it, once you get into it, you'll reclaim something really important, and you'll and that's you, that's part of you. You know, all parts of yourself are important.
Right,
so yes,
make
we
us
absolutely.
Whole beings. Whole
yeah,
beings.
Exactly. So for me, this practice is has helped me, and it just fits. I just fit into this. It just fits for me. It just
well, it's filled up those parts of you that weren't being filled in the other things you were doing, it sounded like.
Right, or it would have been, I could have probably found a way to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if I knew, but I didn't know, you know, and so this is a place where it was a structure to set up to with people like Nicole that were like, oh yeah, I've been there.
Well,
you know,
talk about Nicole Dadon,
mm-hmm.
the founder of One Taste, a little bit, too, so people get a sense. Because here you go from Amma, this Indian saint, to Nicole Dadon, who's this wide-open and beautifully expressive person, you know, about everything, in a sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I walked into One Taste, this place that I knew was a place where people went to work on reopening parts of their sensuality and reclaiming and communicating and knowing the self and knowing others. And I walked into an in-group, the evening communication group, and, you know, I sat down on the floor in front of Nicole, who was sitting on the couch. She was facilitating the group, and I looked at her, and as you started to mention, I mean, she looked vibrant and clear as a bell and present, and she just looked everybody in the eye in this clear, light way, and I just had the sense that she could see everybody, and she looked really solid, really in her body, really open, really turned on and vibrant and alive, and every part of her looked crystal clear, like looking at other people, they looked fuzzy and foggy compared. She looked totally present. She looked crystal clear from her head to her toes, mm-hmm. every part of her. And I thought, wow, what a brilliantly integrated human being. Mm-hmm. And I just, it was something that welled up from deep inside of me, you know, and happened to find its way into my brain at some point. And I just said in my head, I want that.
Great. So that was it. You wanted what you saw there because you knew that could be you. You saw the possibility of yourself there.
Yeah, and I saw an awareness. I saw a clarity. I saw some kind of beautiful spiritual radiance, and I saw it fully, fully integrated and embodied in her mm. physical being, and that is what I had been hungering for.
Mm. Beautiful yeah. description. And then, so you really became a part of the community. I think the best, one of the great things about the community is that they empower women to come forward as an expression for themselves in sensuality. And also in the world, they encourage women to take their place in the world. You know, an equal place, a place of expression.
It's like, there's a lot, you know, I think men and women, a lot of us feel disempowered from our power, our core potential, our being. And, yeah, absolutely. Women are powerful beings, you know, powerful, radiant beings. And for me, I've always seen that, you know, a lot of the places where we're disconnected from our power relates to our sensuality.
Uh-huh.
Like, a turned-on woman is a beautifully radiant, powerful being who is creative and can create and can nurture and can hold and can feed people and can love people.
Right. And in a way, it almost relates to Amma. Amma is turned on by, you know, life, the universe, by her love. I mean, she found it through her way, but, you know, it's in a kind of more normal way. It's just being turned on to life, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, it's like when we say yes to your turn on, say yes to your creative, you know, being, and say yes to life, you know, and just say yes, you know. It's like every time you say no, it's like improv. Every time you say no, it stops and blocks action. But every time you can find a way to say yes, you expand.
So you really work with people saying no, and to get them, people don't even see how they're saying no. I mean, that's
right.
So deep and conditioned.
Yeah, and we work on some deep levels.
Yeah. No. How do you, so what are the priests, can you just outline, like, there's what, four precepts about stay connected no matter what?
Yeah, there are a lot of precepts that, you know, are constantly kind of flowing and being formed. But, yeah, stay connected no matter what. That means that I agree to stay connected to myself, to my own body, to my own feelings and emotions, to my own desires. I agree to do what I need to do in order to stay connected there so I can speak to you from a solid place within myself. And I agree to stay connected to you no matter what so that you can bring every part of yourself to the relationship, to the connection that we're having. You can be honest. You can say what it is you need to say, if it's approving or if it's disapproving or if it's pleasant or unpleasant or if it's angry or whatever. You can say it, and I promise I won't split.
Right.
You know, and in that, there is a breath that can be had because it's like you can actually be more of yourself if you know that the person that you're connecting with is not going to run away just because
right.
they've seen it, you know?
So do you take anyone into the community or just, I mean, if anyone shows up who is willing to go to those, you know, dark, cluttered rooms or even not, I mean, is there a certain type of person you take in? I mean, how do you know?
In what sense? Like, what are you asking about?
How can you join the community? I mean, how can people... They can just come to a meeting if they want to live and
sure.
be a part
well,
of the community.
Well, I mean, you know, people don't normally walk in the door and say, hey, we want to live here, you know? It doesn't quite,
right.
it doesn't normally happen that way. I mean, maybe
right.
once in a while, but people come in, they want to check it out. And they're coming into an environment where you know, the whole intention is that you let go of some of the places where you're locked down so you can be more fully, and people have resistance to that. So people come in and they're like, hey, I want to check this out, and they come in and they enjoy themselves and they're like, wow, this is cool, you know, so they take some courses or they, you know, become part of the community in a sense, because the community is very large and it's like concentric circles where there's a lot of different layers. I mean, there's some people who come in, say, to our center in San Francisco, and they come in and do yoga and that's it, and they leave. You know, and then there's some people like me who came in and did some work and took some courses and thought, like, wow, I want to teach this work.
Right.
You know,
you
so
really it really filled you up. I can see that.
Yeah, it really did. Really did. And I realized at some point that I could live into my purpose because it was about me fully being me. You know, and I was like, wow, I can actually have that here. And it took me a long time to actually be able to fully, like, sit with that, even though I understood it very early on.
Does it seem so different from the ashram days with Amma, or does it seem like it's all just a part of you? Or do you feel
it's all just a part of me. You know, it's all a continuous experience. Yeah, you know, I still just have a life where at some moments I am teaching an amazing course and people are showing beautiful parts of themselves to me. And then, you know, I cooked dinner tonight for the community dinner, and that was rich and enjoyable and fun. And I talked on the phone a lot and, you know, talked to people about taking our courses this weekend because Nicole's coming to New York.
Tell people a little bit about the course coming up this weekend. What is that?
Yeah, Nicole's coming for the weekend course. It's called the Body Course, and it's a lot of what we started to touch on, you know, really recognizing the mind and the body, and oftentimes desires arise from the body. And we oftentimes, if you ask someone, what do you want, you know, what do you want for your body and your connection to your body, I want more of something. I want more connection. I want more comfort. I want more openness or more pleasure. And it's really about navigating through all of those stories that have you think you can't have that, to getting into that place of connection where the body and the mind are bridged in a beautiful, radiant, open, relaxed way in a natural calibration. That's a bit of it. Like, for your body, Alan, what do you want more of? For your
I
body.
Want more joy, radiance, vitality, exuberance. Mm-hmm. But I think we actually have to start wrapping it up. Is that what you said back there, Seth? I think we haven't.
How many minutes do we have?
How many minutes we have?
We're about 2 minutes over.
Oh, okay. So we'll wrap it up right now.
Okay. Well, so the course is this weekend. It's here in New York at One Taste. If anyone's interested, they should go online to onetaste.us and contact us. There's still some spaces available. Nicole's a wonderful teacher. We're happy to have her teaching the course this weekend. It's going to be brilliant.
Right. She is the founder of One Taste. She will be in New York, but she's also in San Francisco for those on the West Coast. She's there.
Yep.
The website, again, is onetaste.us.
Yep, you got it.
I've been talking to Alicia Price. Thank you, Alicia, for sharing so much of yourself.
Alan, thank you, too. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate who you are and putting yourself out there. And thank you for asking about me as well. And this is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and thank you for listening. Email me at newrealities@earthlink. Check my website, newrealities.com, and check the archives here at BBS Radio or on my website. Thank you for listening, and we'll look for you next week. Thank you.